This podcast is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky stuff. You know, any film that we talk about here, we recommend you see in advance. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
An excellent day for an exorcism.
Horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
Horror. You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Horror.
Alive. It's alive.
Groovy.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Oh, the Horror. It's a look at horror films from an expert, an enthusiast, and a newbie's perspective. And today we've got a brand new episode, finally fresh out the gate, with a 1980s super creepy classic called Night of the Creeps. But first, let's introduce our host. I'm Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes.
And we got an interesting one today, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely. This is 1986's... Night of the Creeps, directed by Fred Decker.
All right, so Fred Decker, he's got a very interesting sort of pedigree in Hollywood in that it's very small, but also notable.
It's a little interesting. His directing career does not exist very much. There's not very much that exists of it. So he did Night of the Creeps in 86. He did The Monster Squad, which everyone knows, and loves now. It's a cult favorite, but it didn't make any money at the time. Same with Night of the Creeps. Both of those were critical failures. He directed an episode of Tales from the Crypt, and then RoboCop 3.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that one. I can see why that's why he doesn't direct movies anymore, because that movie's not...
I mean, that's the thing, but, like, you don't hear of a guy directing, like, three major pictures like that and then just going away. Like, even if they're bad, like, we've seen a lot of people make bad movies,
I know he's working on the screenplay for the new Predator film.
Which is an odd pull for now.
We're talking about, like, 2017, and he stopped really doing a lot of work in Hollywood majorly in 1993.
Exactly, yeah. And so he had been a screenwriter, he had been a producer of some note.
But now it's just like, whoa.
That's like
Terrence Malick. Distances in time between like doing stuff, you know.
Well, clearly, because I mean, there's a tie at least from Monster Squad to the Predator connection because of Shane Black, and he's like, okay, clearly come back.
They worked a lot together. Were in the same fraternity because they all had I think they were part of a fraternity that was mainly all screenwriters and filmmakers and stuff like that. So they had worked together a lot then.
Okay.
Anyway, let's get back to the film. I love this movie. I remember seeing this back in probably the late 90s on HBO one night. I had videotaped it as I did with a bunch of other stuff, you know, in VCRs, and you had to look up in the newspaper and you had to put in the code for like what it was into your VCR to record it. I would do that all the time because I was that big of a nerd. I wanted to see my movies. So I had heard about this movie called Night of the Creeps, and I was on a bunch of different, reading a bunch of different books then, and they were saying, you have to, this movie is a cult classic, it's amazing, you have to check it out.
Okay.
And holy crap, I'm so glad that I did. So it's a lot of different things put into one. It's a zombie film, it's an alien film. It's a parasite film. It's all of these.
It's like a cult throwback.
And it's also
throwback,
like, it's also a throwback, but it's also a kind of like a noir, detective noir, a little bit.
It's got a lot. It's spinning a lot of plates.
A ton of them. I think that was the plan. Really, was to kind of throw everything at the wall, and just go with it. Because in the documentary for the Blu-ray for it, Fred Decker was talking about Chris and JC. And he had those, I think, working on another film, or they were characters that he had for another short film, whether he did it or if he had just written with those characters in mind. And then he had come up with this detective, which was Ray Cameron, and the line, "Thrill me." And that was the only thing he had at the time. Mm-hmm. And then grew it from there and decided to put in some of the stuff in the film, like the slugs and the whole alien thing and... all the crazy zombie shit.
I had no idea what this movie really was about when you only told me the title, because I just like, okay, it's another blank of the blank type of a movie. So I kind of had an idea about what I was getting into. So I'm like, all right, probably zombies. And then that's about it. And so I'm like, okay, 80s, maybe like teen romp, I guess. And that's really all I thought about, but I had not known anything about this director, only that you said that he directed Monster Squad.
I mean, this is a really stylized film. So the premise is, it starts in 1959. It's all in black and white in the beginning, and there's a couple going out on a date. They're going out to like a lookout point or whatever, to make out. And, you know, a comet goes by, they end up following it. The guy, in the beginning, you end up seeing an alien ship. That's really
right.
How it starts.
And it's a wildly, and well, this is kind of kicking
there's
off
there's so
the
much
of,
that happens in the film, like even right off the bat, it's just like, holy crap, it just jumps from one thing to another.
Right, and in a weird way, you feel like lesser films, this would easily fall off the rails.
Right.
Because in the first few minutes of the film, you see a crazy, like, Mystery Science Theater 3000 type of alien ship with, like, little midgets in alien costumes.
It's these little crazy monster things that are, they're aliens, but they're all, like, a little deformed running around the ship. One of them has an experiment, and they're telling him, like, no, he can't get it off the ship. We have to get it. And it's subtitled in its own alien language.
Is an alien language.
So they end up getting, he ends up putting the stuff out of the ship, and you were kind of like, well, what's going to happen next? And you think you're going to stick with these aliens. We cut to the black and white 1959.
Right. And then we have a very, well, like, a seemingly, like, established sort of world of, like, a black and white, like, 50s sort of, like, teen movie. Like, it's
kind
just
of, yeah,
like,
it,
taking,
it seems
taking
like
the girl out on the in the 56 Chevy and the, like, going out to make out point, and then there's a cop that stops.
There's a cop that stops him, and he used to date the girl, I guess, and that's where you're like, oh, okay, this is a little awkward. So they decide they're going to go drive off because they see that shooting star, which is really just the space, whatever it is, going to the experiment, going down to Earth.
Right.
So they end up following it out there. We also find out at this point that there is an escaped inmate from a sanitarium nearby, and he has an axe, and he's killed a bunch of people, and he's out there just roaming right by where they're at.
So we have, like, three things that we need to keep an eye out for in
this
movie
the entire film, and we are maybe 5 minutes into it.
Right, yeah.
So the guy goes out, he looks to see what has crashed out there. The girl is waiting in the car. You find, you know, another thing on the radio comes up about this escaped lunatic. She turns on the lights, sees that they're in the area where he's at. He comes up to the car. The killer is, like, moving up to her, like, sneaking up behind her with an axe, and you're just like, oh, shit. The guy is out there. He ends up looking at this experimental tube, and these slug things burst out and get into his mouth. And you're like, oh, well.
What happened?
Damn.
So, like, we have, like, slasher and then body horror types of things already, mm-hmm. like, all rolled up into one.
And then the credits are coming up.
As the credits are coming
and
up.
And you're seeing the black and white, but then you're seeing these really neon, bright colors,
like,
coming out of the
blue and orange colors popping out of the screen almost in these, like ooze fonts.
So you know things are going to get really, really weird. It's already a little strange to begin mm-hmm. with, but it's, you know, it's going to get weirder. So at this point, I think are we introduced to the detective first, or are we introduced to JC?
I believe it's the
Chris.
Detective. And
okay.
Then we go.
And then Chris and JC. So, yeah, because he's waking up from different nightmares. He's been having to deal with the death of this girl. He was the cop in the beginning of the film.
Exactly.
And that was his ex. So he was the one who had to show up on the scene and kill this guy and had to find his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend chopped up into tons of different pieces.
Already asking quite a lot of the viewer to be like, okay, so we have a four-story of aliens like throwing something out into space, not unlike Terrorvision.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And then we have the guilt-ridden cop that, like,
the guilt-ridden cop, yeah, yeah.
Instead of having that being told to us in media res, it's actually like we get his backstory first, and then we start our movie proper.
Yeah, pretty much, because then we get into, you know, we get introduced to him, and then we get introduced to Chris and JC.
Yes.
Who are these college guys. Chris is kind of your basic nerd, but he's like your average guy, I guess,
He's the average, like, type of, like, mousy, unsure, like, plucky, he seems like a hero type. Like he would grow into be a hero type.
Yeah.
But he's just, you know, he's the whiny type of like unsure.
And he's played by Jason Lively, who was in one of the Vacation movies as Rusty. I think it was European Vacation.
Yeah. And he does quite well in the role.
He's fine. Yeah, yeah. He's good in that. And then you have JC, who was awesome. JC
Steve Marshall.
And JC, I don't know if they
polar opposite.
I don't know if they ever mention exactly what JC, like what his condition is, but JC has to walk with crutches because he can't fully walk. I think it might be MS or something. I'm not exactly sure, but he is, yeah, the exact opposite of Chris. Like, he's the one who's outgoing. He's the one who will talk to anybody.
Hyper-charismatic.
Oh,
charming,
yeah, absolutely.
Funny,
super charming.
Like, and he's telling his best friend basically what to do. And like, he's like, oh man, this girl, like, I want to see her and talk to her. He's like, okay, why don't you talk to her about what she likes?
Yeah, he's like, well, first you have to go up to her and actually have a conversation with her. And he's like, oh man, oh,
I don't know.
I just don't know.
Like,
she's
almost
so
comedic,
hot.
To comedic effect almost.
Yeah, so
because he's not listening to this amazing advice.
They work really well together as a duo.
Yes.
So their dynamic with each other is fantastic. So we're introduced to them. He is in love with this girl, Cynthia, who he's just seen. Like, he doesn't even know her.
Like,
but
he's
already
at a frat party.
He sees her at a frat party and is like, I'm in love. And it's, all right, man, I guess you're in love with her. Mm-hmm. That's cool. She is dating this frat guy. What is this, like Kurt or something like that?
It's somebody. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. He's a haircut.
Anyway, yeah, he's your basic 1980s blonde bad guy.
Yeah.
To a T.
I love me a good looking 80s douchebag.
Yeah.
It's delicious to see that that was
a
look
that's
back
an interesting,
then.
That's an interesting way to put it.
It's no, you know the look of an 80s douchebag when you see it in the movies, and by God, it was a real thing.
Oh,
because
no,
I've seen pics of my parents and the kids they went to high school with. That was a look.
No, it was the epitome of 1980s douchebaggery.
Yeah. No, it is. Yes.
So we're introduced to him. And the guys now want to join this frat because JC and Chris, or Chris more than JC, wants to join this frat. JC is going along with it because it's his buddy. Of course, he'll go along and because
he wants to get the girl.
Because he wants him to get the girl. And yeah. So we find out Jill's dating this guy, and then they basically, in order to pledge the frat, the head guy decides to mess with him and is like, you have to steal a body from the morgue. And put it in front of whatever sorority or fraternity it is.
No, it was at this point that I was just starting to be like, okay, when's like the horror movie gonna start happening?
Oh,
here?
This is when it starts, and it
kicks right off because I'm like, okay, once I see body from the morgue, I'm like, great,
right? So, well, we don't. This is a very strange college. So, I guess they found the body of the guy who had the slug put in him, and they decided to build or start studying cryogenics. So. When JC and Chris go down to and break into the morgue area on campus, they find this cryo tube area.
Played by David Paymer, by the way.
The technician is David Paymer. You might recognize him from such classics as the movie Carpool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carpool, Drag Me to Hell, Ocean's 13.
Yep.
He gets around. He's a great character actor.
He's a great character actor, and it was awesome to see him in this in such a bit part. But he ends up leaving the cryo area to try and find the number for his keypad. JC ends up punching in a number randomly while passing by.
Not only that, but he prods this, like, his friend tells him exactly what a cryogenic freezer is. And he's like, let's mess with this then. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And
well, JC,
he's like, no, you shouldn't, but we will.
Okay, so that JC messes with it. JC punches in the code thing. They decide to go in. And now JC is the one, who's like, all right, well, if you want to get into this, we're really going to do this. Let's go into this place and steal a body. And they're like, yeah, oh, look, a frozen body. Let's press this button and release it. When the body moves, they freak out. They run away.
Right.
Screaming like banshees.
Yeah.
As the janitor will later say when they're pulled in.
Right.
The body escapes, goes out, terrorizes everyone. I mean, terrorizes Cynthia at least a little bit. Head explodes, slugs come out, because he goes back to the place he used to remember, which was like that sorority house.
That his body is like drawn to, yes.
Yeah, so that's what happened, because his brain was somewhat still there, I guess, when the slug's reading it. So now we're thrown into a detective story where all of a sudden, you know, our detective character comes back, played by Tom Atkins. Tom Atkins is absolutely amazing. Anything he is in is that much better because he is in it.
Yes, he seems to be like he's 80s Ron Perlman ham.
That's a great way to put it.
It's like he destroys the scenery because he's chewing on it so much, but it's the best way possible.
Anything that he's in, he makes that much better. And in this one in particular, his character, and just that thrill me line over and over and over, it's just ridiculous if anybody else said it, but when he says it, for some reason
it works.
It's
a mantra that this movie has in a weird way. If it weren't for its kind of colorful and haphazard sort of presentation, I would have kind of hated this movie because of its wild changes of pace.
Mm-hmm.
Because it goes all over the goddamn place.
I mean, the tone is...
Not even so much tone, but like the amount of things and people that we're supposed to be paying attention to in the specific scenarios that they're in within a 5 minute span.
Well, it's like a comic book movie without being a comic book movie. So it's like when...
I guess you could say.
It's like the old Tales from the Crypt comics from, I think it was EC Comics from
years ago. A now long dead.
Sure, but then, I mean... it's kind of like taking some of those and putting that now onto the screen, taking like three or four of those stories and just trying to jam as much in there as possible. So you have the, you know, one story that's the slugs going out there on the return of the dead serial killer who the detective ended up murdering and putting underneath one of the sorority mother's house.
Yeah.
Before that was built. You have the slugs getting out and later on infecting all the fraternity guys because they end up in a bus crash. You have the other story of JC and Chris trying to get the girl, but then JC having to confront the slugs and
it's
succumbing
all over the place.
To that. And then it gets really dramatic for a couple of moments and you're like, dude, this is insane. There's a lot of logic jumps here and there for like how the recorder... if you've seen the film, we hope you have by now, because otherwise this conversation doesn't really make a lot of sense.
It's meaningless. See it.
Totally meaningless. Night of the Creeps, easy to find now. Used to not be that way, but very easy to find now. I want
to talk for a moment about the look of this movie, like the cinematography a bit, because I was almost getting a little bit of, if we could, again, make a callback, Reanimator vibes, but it's more clean than that.
Oh yeah, well,
it's sleeker.
We're talking, there's budgetary constraints that you run into with Reanimator, where it was under $1 million. Night of the Creeps was more than that's probably, I would say, significantly more. And you can see it in there, but it's also uses a lot of lighting effects in the way that like Dario Argento would do for Suspiria.
Exactly. Very 70s, very colorful.
Saturated
and more or less like it makes the frame pop.
Right.
In a very crazy way where when you're in like the science lab and you're in like the frat house, like they all have different types of like aesthetic character in that space. And it makes the movie feel more heightened and exaggerated.
Yeah. And that's kind of a, you know, if this movie took itself seriously, it wouldn't be fun.
Exactly. And this is definitely coming from a place of influence of, like, I don't want to say historically when the first movie was to take the piss out of a zombie film or to really, like...
There's probably plenty that did it and did it really
early
on.
Plenty beforehand, but, like, this was a pretty big...
This is a great one, and it did a lot of stuff. It definitely paid homage to, you know, the Alien films of the 50s and the creature features.
Mm-hmm.
It paid homage to some slasher films that were coming out at the time. It paid homage to the zombie films and that generation of
and
stuff
that
was coming out.
This was in 86, so all of that was the kind of resurging
so
again.
So how do you make a film that's still going to keep all that? It's like throw all of it into it. And this movie did that and made it cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
You had, you know, your college kind of love, your basic rom-com love story going on.
Right.
You had your zombie apocalypse type stuff going on at that point where it was turned into like an adventure horror film.
A fairly dynamic soundtrack actually. One of the better ones, which is saying something coming from the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, it was I like the soundtrack for it a lot. I think it's a it's really fun. The music does add a lot to a lot to it. And then, you know, that final scene, even the effects, some of the stuff that they do in it, like the one lawnmower scene where you can tell when he goes over and it's animated blood and it's like a the lawnmower to that dude's face.
Because
I think they added in that whole shack scene, the whole
It seemed to be, because I will say this, it in a weird way, the makeup effects were a bit lacking to my expectations in a weird way.
At points, yeah.
Because the movie looked so good so often, and whenever we actually get to see somebody zombified or something like that, it seems just kind of like bland and basic.
And it's funny because the guys who played the frat guys were all special effects dudes.
Oh, really?
And they're all, most of them are pretty famous ones now.
I think very strange. I'm pretty sure. Because they're actually like fairly good looking. Yeah, like they could be actors.
I'm pretty
like...
sure Greg Nicotero is one of them.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of others, and they're all like effects dudes.
Weird.
So, and that was how they kind of saved on some of the budget, and they were doing a lot of their own effects
on
themselves.
Yeah.
So when they were the final zombies that were coming out of the frat or of the bus.
Yeah, those are
those
noticeably...
ones looked really good because they kept that makeup going, and they were doing it themselves. And then the rest of it, yeah, I mean, they were doing simple stuff. They were simple nowadays, but at the time, like you have low budget, so it's like. And simple because the slugs, some of them were on fishing line, which you can see on occasion when they're pulling it. But there's something just really awesome about this movie. The fact that they use stop motion in it, too. Like, going back to that, like, Harryhausen style of stop motion.
It does. I'm kind of proud of this movie because it tries to take on so much.
Yeah. I think it totally succeeds.
And for the most part, it pulls it off.
Well, it's funny the entire time. The movie succeeds more on a script level than anything else.
Absolutely.
You never really get bored with it. You're entertained by it. The characters are great.
And you can't beat that finale of just like, you know, they're in their prom get-ups just mowing down zombies. Like
Now, the ending
yeah.
is very weird. So, when I saw it growing up, the theatrical ending was the house blows up.
Right.
And the dog comes up to Cynthia and a parasite comes out of its mouth and it ruins the whole, like, hey, we made it out. We could end up,
we
did this. It could be a sequel type thing. They throw that in there and you're like, well, that's it. That's what I'm getting. Well, that kind of sucks. Then on TV, they put the original theatrical ending.
It's always coming out either on VHS or on TV where they bring in the real stuff.
And so when I ended up seeing the original ending, and I think this may have been for the home video cut, but the original ending for the movie, and I don't know if... I think it was on the original theatrical print. You end up seeing, at the end, the house blows up, but then the detective, you see him walking down the street, charred on fire.
Oh, okay. I didn't see this.
Falls,
I saw the theatrical.
Falls to the ground, head splits open, the slugs run off. And then you see the slugs go into a cemetery, and you're like,
oh
shit, they're going to go into bodies. Nope. Alien spaceship is going above, and you see a spotlight all of a sudden out of nowhere just go boop, and then just move from place to place to place. So you're watching this spotlight go over this awesome-looking cemetery.
That's so much better.
It's so cool because it keeps it open for a sequel where, okay, these slugs could be infecting people in there.
And theoretically, 50 years later, they finish their mission.
Since they're already on Earth and they're going there, it could pick up right then. You still have Chris and Cynthia. The detective's gone, but then Chris and Cynthia could be your main characters still.
Just picking it back up.
Picking it back up. And then you could keep
That's
it going.
So much
and I
better.
I think that was the idea to go with to begin with, but then... It didn't do well at the box office. Who knows
why exactly?
And then, you know, we ended up losing that.
But that's a way more interesting ending.
Oh, it's so great. I remember seeing that for the first time being like, yeah, why did they go with the stupid jump scare? And I think they even talk about that in the documentary. It's like, why the dumb jump scare? And it's because that's what was being put in movies.
Where you just want to end it out on a high note.
They just
and
wanted to put a tag in there to scare people one more time. Yeah, to get that, elicit that reaction from them. And it's like, sometimes just don't. Just make a solid ending where people are like, I can't wait for a sequel.
Again, a victim of the 80s and, you know, in the editing room. It's just like the studio wants what it wants.
Studio interference is... always
it was vampant in the 80s.
Well, it's vampant today.
It's true, like, but like it kneecapped a lot of these classics that, like, were there not an alternate cut of, we wouldn't see.
Yeah,
Like, because we always get, and we always see alternate cuts of films when they come out on DVD or Blu-ray now, because it costs nothing to do. But, like, entire prints of endings of movies back in the 80s, like, that could have been a really
Most stuff is lost to time. I mean, they might be able to find some cuts of stuff, but to try and restore it to what it should be is going to cost so much. I mean, a lot of horror films are lost. Like, the real versions of them are lost forever.
And that's a real shame, but I'm glad that we have this one, and it's fun on a bun, man. I really like this.
It really is, man. It's a blast. I highly recommend it to anybody who just wants to see something crazy. Likes, if you're a fan of the Monster Squad, just watch this movie. You'll be happy.
It's got
a
lot of good Monster Squad vibes. Not nearly as classic as that, but I mean, what is?
It'll make you want movies like this again. It'll bring back that desire to bring this back as that type of genre, and hopefully Fred Dekker starts making more movies, because just to have three. Now, granted, I hated RoboCop 3 with a passion, but I mean, whatever. I can give that a pass. He gave us this. He gave us Monster Squad.
I mean, yeah, everybody. Nobody sets out to make a bad movie, and nobody certainly sets out to make RoboCop 3. So.
No. That one was just. That sounds like studio meddling to me.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
But hopefully, he doesn't fall prey to that again in yet another Hollywood outing with Shane Black.
No, our
Predator.
Shane Black created Predator, so like going back and doing what he's doing. Yeah, he'll be just fine. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, yeah, maybe Fred Dekker can do a Night of the Creeps 2 or something.
Well, yeah, that is going to do it for us this episode. I'm really glad that we took a look at this one. All right, so if you want to take a look at us and more of our work, you can find us where you're actually listening to us as well, on iTunes and wherever you can get podcasts. You can send us an email at othehorrorcast@gmail.com. And until next time, I've been Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes.
Thanks again, guys.
Time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.